or edition this afternoon.
Bonjour, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Talia Miracle, an enrolled member of the Ho-Chunk Tribe of Winnebago and program manager at the Little Free Library. She opens up about her impactful work leading the Indigenous Library Program, which increases access to Indigenous literature and fosters stronger, more inspired communities across the U.S. and Canada. Tune in for a meaningful discussion on cultural empowerment through books, the joy of storytelling, and much more. We spoke with her in November of 2024. Enjoy.
I can't even recall a book that I read by a Native author when I was a little kid. In the past 20 years, I would say there's just kind of been like this excitement and this really big need for Indigenous literature. And the stories have always been around and they've always been told, but now I think that they are becoming more commonplace.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Meet Gwaich for joining us today. Native Lights is a podcast and radio show, but it's a lot more than that. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. I'm talking artists, doctors, educators, language warriors, you name it. They have a wonderful mixture of passions. So we talk to them about their gifts and how they share their gifts with the community. And it all centers around finding purpose in our lives and amplifying Native voices. How you doing, Leah? What's going on?
I am doing all right. Just enjoying the season.
Mm-hmm.
Practicing my relaxation breathing.
Oh, really?
Trying to get outside, look at nature and water. How about you?
I also like looking at nature and water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited because I have next week off. I'm going to relax a bit. Treat thyself.
With fine leather goods?
Yes. Leather-bound books and burgundy colors. Mm-hmm. I'm just joking. But yeah, it'll be good. It's good to take a break every now and then. So if you're ever feeling it, folks, you know, take some time for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything special you're going to do?
You know, not a whole lot. Just getting caught up on some things outside of work and just relaxing a bit, you know. I don't have any plans on going anywhere. January, Maria is going on a work trip to Budapest, so I'm going to be going mm-hmm. along with her, you know, exploiting that a little bit. So it's going to be great. So no big travel until then, but that'll be enough big travel. I'll probably cram in some phrases a couple days beforehand. But
you are. Wow. How are you preparing for that?
I've been, you know, watching those things to do in Hungary and Budapest and all that stuff. It'll be fun. I had to get my passport, had to sit at the DMV for a couple hours. It was good. Good times.
Oh, hey. Sometimes you just zone out and lock in and, you know, when you need to sit and do that. Last night, I actually had a travel class to prepare to travel to Japan, which you have been to.
Oh, you're going to Japan.
But there was a virtual class. Yeah, because, you know, Marvin has been learning the Japanese language. So he's planning a trip for us at some point. So.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
Yeah, a little international travel.
It's great.
Yeah, we're pretty excited.
I will be interested to see how that all unfolds.
Yeah. Me too.
Got to take them to the Sega spot with all the games in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many things to see, of course. Yep.
So pretty exciting. But I'm also very excited to chat today. We have a great guest.
Yeah.
Talia Miracle. Talia Miracle is enrolled with the Ho-Chunk Tribe of Winnebago, and she's a program manager at the Little Free Library promoting book access for Indigenous communities. And there's this really neat program called the Indigenous Library Program. And Cole, I know you didn't get an opportunity to chat with her, so I'm going to share my conversation with you that I had with her. So please enjoy.
Let's go.
All right. Bonjour, Talia. Nice to see you.
Hi, Leah.
Thank you so much for taking time to join us on Native Lights. It's just me and you here today. But first, I will have you introduce yourself and where you're joining us from.
Yeah, my name is Talia Miracle. I am Ho-Chunk. I'm part of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska. And today I am talking to you from my dining room in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Excellent. And how are you doing and how's your family doing?
I am doing well. I have got about halfway to go through a pregnancy. So I have been good. I've been tired and excited and feeling all of the emotions. Hmm. I've also got a little 3-year-old boy at home. And we're getting him used to the idea of becoming a big brother. We just got another little kitten at home. We've got a lot of changes happening right now, and it's all going really well.
Mm-hmm. What's the kitten's name?
Her name is Stormy because she's gray and she's tiny and running around and jumping off of things and bringing a lot of good energy, I feel like, that we need right now.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, usually I ask what's on the top of your mind these days, but since we're talking about books today, I'm wondering if you are reading anything in particular that you'd like to share.
I am actually reading Becoming Little Shell. Mm. So it is a book by the current poet laureate of Montana. His name is Chris Latray. And I actually had the honor of meeting him recently at Red Lake Nation College, their site in Minneapolis. And so he did a reading from his book, Milkweed, the publisher, gave away books to everybody who attended the event. And so I am kind of just starting that out. So far, it's a really great story about kind of just reconnecting to your roots. When he grew up, he didn't even realize that he was Native American. That part of his life was always kind of hidden from him. And so the book goes in to explore his journey, finding that out as an adult later in life.
Wow, that sounds like it might resonate with many people.
Yes, that was exactly my thought as well. And he spoke at the Red Lake Nation College event, and he said he kind of didn't think of himself as a poet or a writer. But so far, I mean, the pages that I've read have been really inspiring. I think of him as a poet and a writer. A very good one.
Who needs to, you know, put barriers on things or box yourself into any one description?
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, let's kind of jump into your work and what you do. So you are a program manager at Little Free Library. Can you tell me more about Little Free Library and your role there?
So Little Free Library is a nonprofit organization. We're located in St. Paul, Minnesota, and we just want to provide more book access to everyone. So we have a global network of Little Free Library stewards. Stewards are the people that own the Little Free Library boxes. They're the ones that care for them. And then more specifically, I manage our Indigenous Library program. So it is one of our grant programs, and we provide book sharing boxes and really amazing books where they're most needed on tribal lands. And we work with Indigenous communities and organizations that serve Indigenous communities all across the U.S. and Canada. So it's a grant program. Everything that we provide is all at no cost. The books are written by Indigenous authors. They span different genres and age groups. And really, we just want to strengthen Indigenous communities. We want to inspire readers. We want to make book access more easy. And we just want to support positive literacy outcomes. And it's the best job.
Sounds like it. How long has the Indigenous Library Program been around?
So we relaunched the program about a year and a half ago. Before that, it was under a different name, and we really reworked the program to make it just better kind of in every way. We were really intentional about even like the different types of library models that we offered. So like, for example, we offer one that's made of an unfinished wood. Community members can decorate the library. They can really kind of make it their own. And so that's really great to see what kind of creative ideas people come up with for their libraries. And then we also offer the really great curated book collection too.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Talia Miracle, an enrolled member of the Ho-Chunk Tribe of Winnebago and program manager at the Little Free Library.
Can you tell me about some of the books that you share out?
Like I said, I'm in Minnesota, so we do include some local authors in our book collection. We've got some Louise Erdrich books. Chickadee is one that's part of the bundle. And then we also have some Don Quigley books. You might be familiar with the JoJo McCoon's series for young readers. We've got The Firekeeper's Daughter, which I feel like is another one that everybody knows and loves. We've got Water Protectors, just, yeah, like I said, a bunch of different genres, but the one thing that we keep consistent is that they are all written by Indigenous authors.
I love, once you start listing off names and titles, and we really have a great number of authors and books. I know that hasn't always been the case.
Yes, not at all. I even think about like when I was younger, I can't even recall a book that I read by a Native author when I was a little kid. In the past 20 years, I would say there's just kind of been like this excitement and this really big need for Indigenous literature. And the stories have always been around and they've always been told. But now I think that they are becoming more commonplace in our society. And that also makes me really excited. Just because Indigenous books aren't just for Indigenous readers, they're for everyone. And so I've seen, you know, like a lot of curiosity happening, a lot of questions, and just like a lot of education and knowledge being shared. And that also makes me really excited about my role as well, is just being able to like share our cultures with people who might not be familiar with it, or who maybe have had like questions, or maybe like have heard myths about things. It's just nice to be able to share that. Say, here, like, read this book and you'll have all of your questions or some of your questions answered.
Can you tell me where some of these Indigenous-focused Little Free Libraries are, the ones that are, you know, sitting on the post there?
We've got a couple in Minnesota. The ones that people probably would be able to find really easily are the library at NAC. And NAC is the Native American Community Clinic in Minneapolis. They have a beautiful library that they had somebody on staff decorate. It's a red library box. There's all of these gorgeous, colorful designs on it. That one's right outside of their clinic. We also have a box at the American Indian Family Center in St. Paul. They also had some youth paint portraits along each side of their library. So it's also really gorgeous. We've got a couple of residents who have applied and they've received one for their home. Kind of just walking through random neighborhoods in St. Paul and Minneapolis, you could spot one too. We've got some up in Duluth. We've got them kind of all over the state. And actually, Little Free Library has an app where you can see where these libraries are located. If you wanted to go like find a book or put a book in a library, you can use that app and see where they are and see which ones are close to you or close to your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And I saw a recent one went up.
Yes. We also recently celebrated a launch at the Red Lake Nation College site in Minneapolis. They have a main campus up in Red Lake, and now they've opened their other site in Minneapolis. It is right across from US Bank Stadium. I mean, it's literally across the street. It's a gorgeous building. They kind of restored a few really old buildings and so like kept a lot of the original charm and architecture, but it's a great space. And they had like I mentioned, the Montana Poet Laureate Chris Latray there to do a poetry workshop. And then we also unveiled the library. And then students and staff just came and picked out books. And we got to eat together and just, yeah, celebrate Native authors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a beautiful building, what they did with the older buildings there.
There's so much sunlight in there and everything. It just feels so peaceful and so calm in that building. I just am so happy that those students get to go to school there and like be in that space every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Well, can you tell me a bit about how you got into this line of work?
So I've worked in nonprofits for many years, and I have also previously worked as a preschool teacher and a literacy tutor. So it was kind of all those experiences that came together. And when I saw that Little Free Library was hiring for this role, I had recently had my first son, and I was just really thinking about kind of what I wanted to do for him and what I wanted to do with my life that could be really meaningful for him and just for Native and Indigenous people and our communities. And I wasn't quite feeling that in my current role. The reason I wasn't is because I was helping and working with people from Indigenous communities, but it was only a small part of my job. And I really wanted to make that my whole job. I just felt like that was something that was really important to me. When you have children, I feel like you start thinking about your legacy and your future generations and past generations, and you just have all of these feelings and thoughts that maybe you've never had before. I didn't have them ever this strongly. Helping and working with Indigenous communities is something that just I always knew was important to me, and I wanted to dedicate more time to it. I was also just a really big reader. When I was a little kid, my dad was just a voracious reader. We bonded over books when I was younger, and it was just always just like a really special thing for me. And also just recognizing that, you know, there are kiddos growing up in houses where there aren't a lot of books available. I just felt so strongly about wanting to be able to provide that for more kids. And again, when I was little, like I didn't have these amazing books by Indigenous authors. They were either telling inaccurate stories, or, you know, like my story wasn't there, or they were talking about Indigenous people in the past tense. And so that really confused me as a little kid. And I don't want other little kids to have to like have kind of like those thoughts of insecurity and just confusion around what they're reading. And there's just so many great stories to celebrate now that I just want to make sure that we can share those with as many people as possible.
Totally. And what keeps you motivated then, you know, day in and day out to keep going? Because, you know, it might be similar, you know, with journalism and storytelling, that there is like the great, like fun part, the talking with folks, the sharing stories part of the work. And that's like only a part of it. You know, that's kind of a small part of it. And then there's the housekeeping and the, what I'm sure, like grant proposals, the things that keep the lights on and the doors open and things like that. What keeps you motivated to keep going?
I think what keeps me most motivated is seeing all of the other great work that's happening in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, but in Minneapolis especially. We have such a rich, diverse Indigenous community here. And I feel like as Native and Indigenous people, we have been a community that has been intentionally under-resourced. We experience so many just disparities with health and with education, with socioeconomic things, and just knowing that I'm able to provide something, a service, and an opportunity that could potentially be life-changing for people is really powerful for me. It's really inspirational. Being able to give back to my community is what's very important. I've always kind of been in like helper roles in my whole life. It's kind of like what I naturally gravitate towards. And then becoming a mom has just been a huge part of what has kept me motivated, just because I'm thinking about what I want for my son and what probably every parent wants for their child. And that's, they want the best and they want them to celebrate themselves. They want to celebrate their culture, and they really just want them to grow up and be kind, knowledgeable, strong people. And so that's, I mean, that's something that I think about every day. And so, yeah, when I'm doing the grant proposals, when I'm sitting behind a computer, which is not my favorite thing, when I'm answering emails, you know, that is part of the job. And I'm just reminding myself that that is part of kind of bringing the greater good through this role. When I get to be out in community and provide books and provide libraries and go to like events, but like the one at Red Lake Nation College, being in communities, kind of, that is like my why for doing this.
I totally get that. Well, I mean, my kid's 11, so I'm like trying to reduce screen time. And on the other hand, I'm on the screen at least 8 hours a day for work. So it is nice to crack a book and read. I know sometimes I have to articulate that to him, that I want him to read an analog book and not a digital book.
Yeah.
Open it up.
I mean, it is an important skill that young kids are losing. Even when I was a literacy tutor, I worked with pre-K kids. So these were, you know, kids ages 3, 4, and 5. And we would crack open a book and some kids would just start scrolling on a page because that's what they were used to doing. I had to teach them the skill of turning the page of a book rather than scrolling. It's shocking to see somebody that young who's already got ingrained in them, you know, the skills of using a phone or an iPad, but not something as simple as turning a page.
Hmm. I have never heard that before.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Keep telling your 11-year-old analog books. They're important. We need to keep reading them. And it's a skill that you have to learn. And so keep strengthening that skill.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I have accidentally done something similar. I don't know, I have like a book or something and there's a photo and I try to do the pinch zoom.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I feel probably everybody's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard not to. I mean, our lives are all digital. A lot of our work depends on screens. I mean, that's, you and I are looking at each other on a screen right now. And not to say that like reading books on your phone or a Kindle or something, a screen, is terrible either. But yeah, I feel like there's something really special about holding like an actual book and like feeling the pages and smelling that book.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Talia Miracle, an enrolled member of the Ho-Chunk Tribe of Winnebago and program manager at the Little Free Library.
What sort of feedback have you gotten from community about the Indigenous Library program?
I have received amazing feedback. I've had some stories that have brought me to tears. People are so grateful that something like this exists. A lot of the communities that we work with, for example, are really rural. So we work with a lot of First Nations communities in Canada. They don't have a library. Or if they do, they have to travel to a larger city to get to that library. Library cards there aren't free, so then they have to pay to get the library card. There's just so many barriers to literacy. A lot of what I hear is that we don't have books. We don't have literacy resources. We don't have transportation to get to the library. If we do have a library, it's only open X amount of hours a week. And another thing that I hear a lot is that, you know, we don't have books that reflect us, that reflect our experience, that reflect our culture. And so even making a difference, I've heard a lot of great feedback about our book collection that we offer, just because it touches on so many things that are important to us as Indigenous people. So there's a lot of people that appreciate that we offer books that include Indigenous languages, touching on language revitalization. Like, that's such a huge topic now. And it's so amazing to see, you know, like little kiddos speaking their language. And I mean, it just, that can bring tears to my eyes, is when you see a little kid just sharing those words and speaking those words, just generational knowledge that's being passed on. So we can do that through this program a little bit. We also have books that discuss like indigenous foods and pre-colonized foods. So we can talk about food sovereignty. And then even, you know, like young adult books, so fiction books, like Dawn Quigley is an author that I mentioned earlier. I mean, she just has amazing young adult books that focus on indigenous characters, you know, not as like an outsider secondary character, but like as somebody who is the main point of the story and, you know, going through the issues that teenagers go through. It's really comforting to kids to be able to see that represented in books. We've had great feedback altogether.
That's so great. I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure to ask about mentors, Talia. Did you find yourself leaning on mentors as you went through navigating your career?
Yes. So I feel like through each step of my career, I have had somebody in a mentor role. It's really important to me to be able to see really strong, educated Native women in leadership roles. So no, this person is not a mentor to me, but somebody that I've been finding a lot of inspiration from lately is Peggy Flanagan. Before we knew the outcome of the election, I had thought about what it would be like if she were into a higher leadership position in the state of Minnesota. Like what would that mean for Indigenous communities? So while that didn't happen, it was really great to consider the possibilities of that. And I was also recently at a nonprofit conference, and she was the keynote speaker. And I don't know how they got her there for this keynote speaker when she was still campaigning. This was also prior to the outcome of the election, but she just had, you know, like 500 people in this room completely hanging on every word that she was saying. And she was just really speaking to a room full of nonprofit professionals and sharing a little bit of her personal experience too, like utilizing social services and growing up needing to access some services that now she's a really big proponent of. And I hope that every little girl gets to see somebody like Peggy and just kind of lets them see that, yeah, everything is possible.
All right. Talia Miracle, getting literature out to communities all over the place.
Yeah, it's great to hear from her and just how she's connecting youth to that, you know, something that she was not necessarily able to access. So it's great to see her and hear about what she's doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Miigwech, Talia Miracle, program manager at the Little Free Library, getting Indigenous books out to communities. Excellent work.
I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening. Gigawabamin.
Gigawabamin.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and AMPRS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
We just heard Native Lights Radio, where Indigenous voices shine. You can find more information at minnesotanativenews.org. Good afternoon. I am Jennifer Barr. It's time now for KAXE Rewind, a look back at some of the stories you may have missed this week. We're going to visit Roots and Wings Nature School and hear their phonology report. We'll also hear what we're reading, Tammy Bobrowski's conversation with actress Lily Taylor, and Soccer Talk with Chris Walker and Dan Gannon. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Shiro's Radio, and at 3 o'clock, it's Minnesota Mixtape here on KAXE. Let's start with this week's What We're Reading. Actor Lily Taylor's rediscovery of birds helped her to be more present and engaged with the world. She shares her experiences in her new book, Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing.
During a much-needed break from her work as an actor, Lily Taylor sought peace and quiet. And in that quiet, she rediscovered birds. Now an avid birder, Lily wanted to share how birding has helped her listen, practice mindfulness, and be present and engaged with the world. And she shares this in her new book, Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing. Here's our What We're Reading conversation with Lily Taylor.
In the introduction of Turning to Birds, you note that there are similarities between acting and birding, and I wonder if you can tell us about those connections.
Yeah, the main similarity is the skill of listening, which is, for me, I mean, crucial to acting. And I found that it's crucial to not just when I'm observing birds, but really everything. You know, there's this neurologist who said, hearing is a sense and listening is a skill. And the difference between the two is paying attention. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. So we have to know what inspired you to put your birding passions and those observations into a book, into this book.
As time went on and as birds became more important to me, and I found that I was making, sometimes I would put my observations onto, actually I was using that app Day One, and I saw that, oh, I would reflect back, and then I thought, I started to feel the need to share, because I started to see that whenever I mentioned birds, people would light up in some way, even if they didn't have, it was usually a story with like an aunt or someone in, you know, or think they'd heard something about. And I started to think that there was maybe people who would want to hear some of my observations. Mm-hmm. Then I started to feel that it wouldn't be honest for me not to share it to me.
So along with that, a lot of the chapters are based on a specific bird. For example, you have a chapter on called swifts, you have a chapter called finches, catbirds, etc. And then each chapter, you know, has some kind of essay, whether it's about the bird or your experience with it, or maybe even something that's going on in your life. So that was really interesting to see that mix of the three. How did you decide which birds were going to be the focus in the chapters?
Well, it's almost like, I wonder if it's some other way around, but I don't know what way around, because it's almost like what bird needs to be a chapter. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and it's sort of like, it was about like what had the most energy for me. And, you know, one of my editor, Libby, said to me at the very beginning, I said, is there anything you can give me as I go out from here? And she said, think about what you're gifting the reader. And, you know, if a bird wasn't kind of, if the essay wasn't doing it, then that just had to go and went into an archive or something. And so the birds that were in there felt, it seemed that they had something to say.
For sure. Yeah, they do. One of the essays is dedicated to the cedar waxwing, which I loved seeing this in there because they're such a cool bird. And I love how you describe them as, quote, a bird that is so perfect, it doesn't seem real, end quote. Because that is so accurate. They look so unreal with this, their mask and the color and the shape. Can you tell us about the first time you saw a cedar waxwing?
Well, up close, the first time was on the ankle of a woman, and it was a tattoo of a cedar waxwing. That was the first time I saw one up close. And that was a tattoo contest at the biggest week in American Birding Festival. And then I started to get to know a cedar waxwing in my yard upstate New York. They have a very high pitched call. It's it almost sounds like a high whistle or almost a wire sizzling, or I don't know how to describe it. It's hard to describe birdsong. But anyways, you can listen to this. You can find the sound. Just search Google cedar waxwing sound and keep your ears open to that sound, because they're around more than I realized they were. Mm. But they kind of flit around a lot. They seem a little restless. So, and they're hard to follow. So, but I followed them and I figured it out.
Yeah, they are super hard to photograph, because when I started reading this chapter, and you had mentioned that, and I decided to go back through my phone to see the photos that I had taken of them, and they're all just slightly blurry because they don't, they never stay still. So I get that. Yeah.
This is What We're Reading, and we're talking with actress Lily Taylor, who has just written a book, Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing. So, Lily,
something you said in Turning to Birds really resonated with me. I am a backyard birder, so I'll be out in my yard staring at the sky and the trees, sometimes with my binoculars, sometimes taking photos with my long lens. And every once in a while, I stop and think, my neighbors must think I'm so weird because I'm out pointing my camera right at their house sometimes. You mentioned in your book there are times when you were pursuing a bird and people are kind of staring at you like, what is that woman doing? Do you have advice for finding that balance between, you know, wanting to learn more about birds, wanting to follow them, look at their habitats, versus having to do so in these public spaces where people are around and looking at you kind of funny?
Yeah, good question. And I've wrestled a lot with it. And what I've kind of come to realize is that whenever the conversation happens, you know, when it goes past the odd look and becomes, what are you looking at? That a door opens. And it's an opportunity not only to connect with a person, but to also share a moment together. Because usually I have found that person is interested in what I'm looking at. Even if it might dissipate faster, like maybe they might not stick around for the show, right, like that's about to begin or whatever. Like in the case I'm talking about, the swifts going into the chimney, the woman left before, but she was curious enough to know what I was looking at. And it's one of those moments that you have at the end of the day, like that you shared with another human being, and you got the news out that there's this flying, this thing with wings that's interesting.
I love how you incorporate into these essays your work location as an actor. You're frequently on filming locations, so you get to travel all over the country, and birding seems to tie in really well with this. You're showing in this book that as long as you have a good bird ID app on your phone, a good pair of binoculars, and maybe a little bit of time on your hands, you can turn just about any excursion into a bird watching one. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And so for me, it's sort of any excursion into something with meaning, I think, because that's what the birds help me find meaning. And that's also what I'm finding life is about, is meaning, you know. And what birds do is they open that door to anywhere that I am, because they are a portal. They're a portal for me. And like, for instance, I just learned about an elm tree the other day in a park near my house in Brooklyn that I've passed and haven't really noticed. But because of the bird action in the tree, I started to go deeper into what is that tree? And mm-hmm. all of a sudden now that park has more meaning for me, because mm-hmm. I know more about that place.
So talking with you about your book is really, really good timing. Our station does a question of the week. And last week, the question was, what is your favorite bird? So Lily, do you have a favorite bird, or what are some birds that you really just want to see in person yet?
I would like to see an albatross.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I haven't. And I would like to. Seabirds fascinate me. But the first one that comes to my mind, like in my life, is a pileated, and I have no idea why.
Pileated woodpecker.
Yeah, a pileated woodpecker.
We have a lot of those here.
You do?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why. I think they're just so, they really do remind me of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You know, they really do. And I just get excited when I see it, when I hear a pileated.
Yeah, of all the birds that we have up here, those are the ones that most resemble, I think, a flying dinosaur, just in the way, one of the flying ones, just in the way that they move. It's really very interesting to watch. So what do you recommend for someone who is just getting interested in birds like you went through? Do you have some advice?
Keep it simple. It's just maybe start with a feeder, just see what's going on in your neighborhood and get to know your neighbors, you know, your bird neighbors. And I mean, Sibley, David Sibley, he has one of the best bird guides. He also talks about bird behavior. So he's a good one to go to help understand, oh, why that bird moves like that and the other bird moves like this. And then the Merlin ID app, and just to, again, see what is around you. And of course, Cornell is a great resource. Mm-hmm. Audubon is a great resource. Mm-hmm. eBird. And so start, but just keep it simple and just be open, and you don't have to know all of it today.
Lily Taylor's new book is Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing. This is a lovely book where you'll discover a lot of meaning in small moments. It's What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski.
This is KAXE Rewind. I'm Jennifer Barr. We're looking back at a few of the stories you may have missed this week. Up next, we're going to hear from the students at Roots and Wings Forest School in New York Mills, as well as the response from our phonology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell.
This is Otto. This is Theodore.
This is Rose.
This is Hank.
This is Solon.
This is Troy reporting from Roots and Wings Forest School. The water was very warm. I stepped in this really dark brown spot in the water, and my foot sunk like almost to the bottom. I really liked to go cannonballing.
We saw two frogs today, and I caught one under the bridge at Black Cove, the wooden bridge. We put them back in the water.
And what did they do?
They swam away. I was trying to catch the one I caught.
I heard weird birds that sound like chickens in the forest.
The water was getting really warm. The air was 90 degrees. It was really windy.
Outside in our classroom, we found a gardener snake. His belly was really big because there was something in his belly he ate. And it was really fast, and it bit Hank. We saw some early blue violets.
I picked up a lot of rocks.
Thanks for listening! Stay wild!
Stay wild. Thank you, Otto, Theodore, Rose, Hank, Soren, Trent, all the kids at Roots and Wings Forest School. Man, I wish I could air the entire cut of, you know, the full report, with mistakes included, of Roots and Wings Forest School, because it is some glorious chaos. Those kids are having such a great time. I love their note that outside in our classroom, that is such a wonderful phrase for me. They do have an outdoor classroom. They spend a lot of their time outside. And there's, I can give you a sneak peek into the full report. There was some controversy over whether Hank actually got bit by the garter snake.
Thanks for that report. Only Hank knows for sure if he got bit by the snake. Coming up next on KAXE Rewind, yesterday morning we got to talk soccer with Chris Walker and Dan Gannon.
Great, Chris. So the world's most famous soccer player came to Minnesota, and of course nobody in our actual sports page is saying one word about it, so I'm just going to let you fly. You were there. Lionel Messi came to Minnesota, probably the greatest player to ever play the game of soccer. Can be a little debatable, but for me, I would, at least in our lifetime, certainly Lionel Messi is the best ever. What was it like, Chris?
Well, first off, you misspoke because you said the world's most famous soccer player. The world's most famous athlete was in Minnesota.
Yes.
Are you? Yeah. Would you agree? Yeah. No, I think he has. I think he
worldwide
has
for sure.
Something
for
10,
sure.
15 million, something like that, Instagram followers. No, I don't think there's any question. He's the world's most famous athlete because, yeah, soccer is the world's game. So I know. I love that they mentioned we had to lead with the biggest story in town, and it was, you know, the Twins. Even that, I thought, you know, Timberwolves give him a little bit more credit than the Twins. But yeah, last weekend, it was a big sports day. You had Inter Miami coming to play Minnesota United. You had the Wolves playing. You had the Twins playing. It was just a cool day to be in the cities. There was just so much buzz around town, but specifically at Allianz Field, it was an atmosphere that I had never experienced before. And we've had season tickets, my brother and I, since the Loons announced they'd be going to Major League Soccer. We joined when they were still in the NASL, playing at the National Sports Center in Blaine. So to be at, you know, even comparing this to when Allianz Field opened the first game, to when the MLS All-Star game was there, this was just on another level. They had pregame festivities starting at noon, I think, and the game started at 3:30. And we got down there very early, and there was already cars lined up, parking spots taken that would normally not be filled 3 hours before a game. But it was kind of a spectacle for Minnesota soccer, and I think a big moment in our area. So many fans just around the stadium that didn't even have tickets to the game just to try to get a glimpse of, again, the world's most famous athlete and arguably the greatest soccer player to ever take the pitch. So
that's crazy. So it's like beyond movie star, beyond, you know, whatever the most famous person on the planet you can think of. And he's right there.
Yeah, and it was cool because my daughter and I had a conversation. I had the same conversation with another family we talked to who drove down from Grand Rapids that morning and drove back that night. Another kid in our youth program just said, like, you guys get to see Lionel Messi play in person. And there are millions of kids around the world who dream of watching him play. So to just have him here in Minnesota, you know, when they announced this, there was obviously a lot of buzz, but he hasn't played in every road game, you know, that's been on Miami's schedule. He didn't travel to Vancouver famously last year because it was like a 5,000-mile flight from Miami to Vancouver to play on turf. There was a game in Houston earlier this year that he did not travel to because he had a little bit of an injury, and I know local fans there were upset because they paid hundreds for tickets. But timing worked out. The weather was beautiful. It was another almost kind of, as someone who grew up in the Twin Cities, loving soccer and playing soccer, never in my wildest dreams could I have imagined it getting to this level in Minnesota.
It's wild. You mentioned Blaine, and I spent many, many, many years before the Loons became the Loons supporting the sort of earlier incarnation of the Loons out in Blaine. And so I feel you, like, moving from that situation out in Blaine, which was amazing in its own very small way, you know, like independent supporters and just a lot of passion there kind of laid the foundation for them to move to MLS, become the Loons, build a stadium, Allianz Stadium, which is a gorgeous stadium. And now, voila, Lionel Messi and the Inter Miami, who's, you know, a star powered team, not only by the players on the field, but David Beckham is one of the owners, mm-hmm. the primary owner, I believe. So it's crazy.
Yeah, and on top of all that, the game started, and the actual game itself was one of the most entertaining Loons games that I've been to, because Minnesota United have played their style can be frustrating to watch this year because they just let the other team have the ball. I think they have the league's lowest possession rate by far, but what they do so well is counterattack and set pieces, and so they scored two goals in the first half and were up 2-0 at half, but they had, I think, 32 or 33% of possession. Miami just held onto the ball and could not penetrate the Loons defense. And then it was a game you couldn't script better because the Loons really, really dominated in the sense that they played such great defense, capitalized when they need to. They really did shut down Messi. I think, unfortunately for Messi fans, you didn't see his greatest game, but it was also great to see the Wonderwall, the supporter section, go crazy every time that Will Trapp or another player would stuff him. And then the Loons won 4-1, but the lone goal scorer.
They really smashed them.
The Loons won 4-1, and the lone goal scorer for Miami was a Messi goal that really was an impressive goal. Not a highlight reel goal by any means, but he's just so quick with his feet that he got the ball, he had the tiniest bit of space, and was able to get the left foot on it and score.
Yeah, one touch, he turned and then mm-hmm. drilled it into the far post, low into the ground. It was, in a lot of ways, just like vintage, run-of-the-mill Messi goal, you know, but brilliant. He makes it look so easy. And for all of us mortals, it's impossible to pull something like that off. And if I, at the risk of getting into the weeds, but for our listeners here, you talked about Minnesota's defensive style. And mm-hmm. right now, defensively in professional soccer, playing three defenders in the back is all the rage, right? Just all across team after team after team is playing three in the back. Minnesota United play five defenders in the back, and then three midfielders and two forwards, I think, 5-3-2, right?
That's what they've done for most of the season, and they had a stretch where they, I think, lost a couple games, or they went three games without a win. Granted, two of them were a draw, and Eric Ramsey, their coach, did switch it up. He played a 3-4-3 against, I can't recall who, but I remember thinking that was an interesting formation to go with. They got back on the winning track. I think that was against Austin, and they won 3-0 on the road. And I actually don't recall what formation they started with against Miami, but I think they had at least four at the back. They did make a trade for Julian Gressel, who's played on the U.S. national team a few times. So I know that that's changed up a little bit because they moved another one of their defenders forward. But yeah, regardless with what either formation, they are okay letting other teams hang on to the ball because they can then kind of kill you with long throw-ins, counterattacks up to one of their forwards, and it's worked. They're sitting third in the West, I believe. They lost on Wednesday night, but I think
they're on 22 points. Yep. They're 5 points off Vancouver, the leader. And I think it's true. It's an interesting style that you don't see very much, where teams would just sit back and defend. So like Chris was saying, a majority of the game, the other team, the opposing team, doesn't matter who they are, they didn't do it just because of Messi, will have the ball and be passing the ball around, mm-hmm. pass, and they pack it in so tightly and defend so well. Like, they've clearly bought into the coach's ideas here. And then, yeah, their counterattack is lightning fast. And for them to be third in the league, for me, they're the sleeper team of the season across the whole league, MLS. I think nobody expected them. They don't have a star player. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of guys that are very good and a lot of guys that'll just grind, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like a boxing analogy. When you just let the other team throw as many punches as they can, you wear them out, and then you just come back with one or two uppercuts or haymakers, and there you go.
All right.
I'll be down to see them this Saturday against St. Louis.
Yeah,
I'm down there for a youth soccer tournament, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Loons play against St. Louis.
We got two texts in. Steve from the Como area of St. Paul said that the Loons were the first team to beat Miami by more than 2 goals.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, I think it was only Miami's second loss of the season.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Eric says, I live by Allianz, and it was fun to see all the excitement last weekend. Unfortunately, did not attend the game, but still just to be in the neighborhood sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, they had a big watch party outside the stadium for anyone who just wanted to be part of the day. Like, there's a huge grass area called the layover lawn. And they had a big screen. They had Soul Asylum playing a free concert before the game.
Oh my gosh.
There was Target, you know, Target's a huge sponsor of the team, had a bunch of different games and activities for kids. There's a new inclusive playground, fantastic playground that our kids love to go to. There's a lot to do around the stadium, and they're continuing to develop that area, that midway area of St. Paul. So they really made sure that any soccer fans who wanted to just be part of it, and again, try to get a glimpse of the Miami bus. I don't think Messi stepped off in an area where people could see him, but just be part of the day's festivities. Anyone could be included. And one more note I want to make is, you know, I think for just casual people listening, people not as, you know, maybe just always hearing growing up like, oh, soccer's the world's most famous sport, and hearing it's going to be popular one of these days, I do think it's events like this that really help the game grow, because I think it starts with the youth and the kids who, when I grew up, I loved soccer. I didn't really wear soccer jerseys to school. I don't remember seeing any other kids wear soccer jerseys to school. I drop off my kids at elementary school, I see so many kids wearing Messi jerseys, Ronaldo jerseys, Manchester City jerseys, and some random jerseys I'd never expect kids to see. But I think when kids do see this, and then they go out and they join their local soccer club, which I know Grand Rapids, our local soccer club, I think we've now almost equaled the amount of kids that are in hockey as one of the largest local youth sports clubs. I think that's what really helps the game grow, is bringing kids out to see events like this. And you obviously have the World Cup coming to North America next year, and that should help as well. But it's not like you have a big event, you turn on a TV, and somebody instantly becomes a soccer fan. I think it's just a long, gradual process for this next generation to help the game grow. And I think last Saturday did that, you know, for a lot of
local
kids.
So in summation, St. Paul was starstruck. Messi scored a nice Messi goal, and more importantly, the Loons gave them a spanking that they did not enjoy. 4-1 victory. We only got a few minutes, Chris. Let's move on to the U.S. Women's National Team, eh?
Yes.
So they're playing in St. Paul at Allianz Field at the Loon Stadium, May 31st against China. A bunch of kids, you spoke of youth soccer. I coach youth soccer in Bemidji, and a bunch of kids from my team are going to be at that game. And I think China's ranked like in the top 20 in the world. They used to be a power when the U.S. Women's National Team, or when the U.S., sorry, when the Women's World Cup was in the U.S. in 98. That was the U.S. Women's National Team of Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and all them. China was one of the top three teams in the world. So now they've kind of fallen down quite a bit, down to 17. But they'll be playing the U.S. Women's National Team, who I think have 2 losses this year, which, I don't know, is that concerning to you?
You know, I think after Emma Hayes' hot start, I think everyone was going to expect a little bit of a regression. I know Sophia Smith, I think she's out, or Sophia Wilson. No, sorry. I think it's out for the year.
Yeah, she's having a baby now. She's pregnant.
That's right. So. But, you know, the pipeline to the U.S. Women's National Team is still so strong that I think it still gives other you know, players an opportunity to shine. And being that there's so many friendlies this year, I'm not concerned as much. I would love to see a player like Maddie Dahleen, local player from Edina, who's playing with Seattle's NWSL team, the Reign. I would love to see her playing a game like this, coming back home. I think she scored her first career club goal the other day. I'm not as concerned, and I think they have five friendlies coming up this through the month of June, starting in July and ending with Canada out in D.C. at July 2nd. So. No, not as concerned, but I'm excited for the game too. I don't know if I know we are sending a bunch of our club's players as well. Grand Rapids is sending a charter bus, so I would love to make it down, but I don't know if we'll make it for that one.
If anyone's listening that's going to the game, for me, watch Lily Johannes, a midfielder.
Yes.
I think she's only 17.
Yeah, she was born in Netherlands,
sort of like,
right?
For me, she's sort of like the women's version of Lamine Yamal, the Barcelona player who's also 17 and is lighting the world on fire right now, potentially the next Messi I don't want to jinx him, but Lily Johannes is a special, special player. She looks like she's almost playing in slow motion or half speed, and that's just because of her control of the ball and her vision of the game is so unbelievable. Like, watch this player, Lily Johannes. Here in the cities, May 31st, go see the U.S. Women's National Team versus China. Not only are they awesome role models for girls and young women, but also for the boys as well. They're just incredible players, incredible athletes, and their coach, Emma Hayes, is a pretty interesting character, I would say, and is doing a lot of interesting things with the team. And it's just, like Chris said, it won't maybe be on the Messi star level, but there'll be a buzz in that stadium for the U.S. Women's National Team for sure.
And one more quick shout out to Minnesota Aurora, local Minnesota women's semi-professional team, starting their season May 22nd. If we have any listeners in the cities, or if you're traveling down to the cities and want to catch some really great soccer at a really much cheaper rate than what U.S. soccer charges, head to Egan, and they play at the Vikings training facility out there, TCO Stadium. I know we're also sending the club down, a bunch of girls down for a game, so we're looking forward to that.
Nice.
Great. Well, that's Chris Walker and Dan Gannon. It's been Soccer Talk. Thanks so much, you guys. It's been fun.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
That's it for KAXE Rewind this week. We hope to see you on Thursday at the Kick It with KAXE event. It's a free outdoor concert featuring Molly Mayer and Woodblind meets Tig Alexi at Rapids Brewing Company. It's also KAXE's annual meeting starting at 5:30. We'll have a brief recap of the past year. Plus, we'll give out some volunteer awards between the bands. It's made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Again, this Thursday at Rapids Brewing Co. Kick It with KAXE. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Barr.
At a time when tariffs and federal funding cuts can shake up rural communities like ours, it's more important than ever to support people-powered radio, KAXE. I'm News Director Chelsea Perkins, and we're not driven by the government or corporate interests. We're powered by you. When you become a member, you're making sure local news, music, and voices stay strong right here in northern Minnesota. Donate at KAXE.org.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. The Minnesota DNR recommends refraining from burning debris piles until later this fall. Green branches and logs won't burn well and create smoky conditions. Piles could also reignite, creating wildfires.